Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. This is the podcast that's on the edge of consciousness, where science, spirit, and the unknown collide. Right now, humanity is definitely standing at a fascinating crossroads. I can tell you, once again, I was at a party last night, and people you wouldn't think would bring it up because they're not necessarily in my tribe started asking me all these questions about extraterrestrials, about UFOs. That's where we're at. This is good. Governments are talking openly-ish about UFOs. Military footage has definitely gone public. Pilots, intelligence officers, scientists, and experiencers like myself around the world are stepping forward. We have a voice. And the deeper that this conversation goes, the more mysterious it becomes, because it's not simply about spacecraft that's in the sky. Right now, we're diving into one of the most fascinating cases in history. This is the Rendlesham Forest incident, and it's often called Britain's Roswell. You may recall that a year plus ago, Nick Pope was on talking about this before that beautiful man passed away. So you can always go back and listen to that interview. Now, my guest today discovered while investigating this site that the phenomena surrounding Rendlesham may go far beyond extraterrestrials. My guest is filmmaker, musician, UFO researcher, and fearless truth seeker, Mark Christopher Lee. And Mark's new documentary journeys deep into the mystery of the Rendlesham Forest and asks this very provocative question: what if the phenomena is not just watching us, but is interacting with us? And with that, I bring Mark Christopher Lee onto the Dare to Dream podcast. It is so great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Debbie, and thank you for the great introduction. These are interesting times, like you say.
They are amazing times. I will just say on that note that I even went into somebody's office for a regular personal business reason. This person lives in California, originally from Russia, and I happened to notice, I noticed things, and I saw in her bookcase she had something religious. When she said, "Oh, what's your podcast about?" It's always a very interesting question, because the answer is going to be extraterrestrials, channeling, and shamanism, and that's what we talk about. And I don't know what I'm going to find when I say that to someone who appears very mainstream and potentially religious. And because even though very redacted by the government, what's starting to be disclosed, she had a lot of good questions, and I welcome them. I'm happy to be a voice for this. And you have a documentary coming out this month. Very exciting. Tell us about your documentary. Tell us the name, and just very briefly, because we're going to deep dive into this.
Okay, the Rendlesham UFO, the British Roswell. It's about our investigation into this significant, like you said, UFO encounter. Everyone knows about Roswell, but not everyone knows about this case. It's the UK's Roswell, but it also, you know, involves US personnel. It was two military bases, NATO bases in the Cold War, 1980. And they witnessed something that appeared in the forest, lights, and then a craft, and then there was some interaction with this craft. So the backstory has always been fascinating to me. However, that's not what I wanted to make a film about. What I wanted to make a film about is the ongoing activity in that area. UFOs, orbs, streaks of light, messages, And people are actually going to this forest every weekend in the UK to experience these weird phenomena. And not many people know about that. So we decided to do a trip there ourselves and investigate and see what we could find.
I love this. This Rendlesham incident that you're talking about, called the British Roswell, your investigation suggests something really strange, closer to phenomenon that we might have akin to here, like the Skinwalker Ranch. Do you believe that these locations are actually portals, or are they consciousness hotspots rather than just simple UFO landing sites?
It's an interesting question, and I'm verging towards them there being a portal there. And I think there's certain portals and certain locations on the planet, and that this is the energy, the intelligence that is coming through and interacting with whoever goes there, whoever's open to it. Because we went there with open minds, but a little bit skeptical. Even though one of the executive producers on this film was an ex police in, criminal investigator, John Hansen. He's a very down to earth chap, but he was the one that inspired this film, because he told me of his adventures there. After 1980, he'd gone there and shown me footage of orbs and actually a UFO appearing. It's like, wow. So he inspired us to test this out, and he said, they were going there, and this was, in the 80s and 90s, and doing what we might call CE5 meditation now. But back then, they didn't know what it was. They would just get together in a group, raise their vibrations, their consciousness levels, and then things would happen. So that was the aim of the film. I wanted to see what we could find, and we did find some weird interaction between something. It was mainly through this weird. As soon as we started doing the manifesting, we started hearing this weird electronic sound, and it was bouncing around the woods, and it was really, really mysterious, and we still can't explain it now. And then that was accompanied by orbs of light and a feeling as well that something was interacting with us. It wasn't just us relying on the physical senses. Something was clearly interacting with us. And that was really interesting. I'm still trying to find the answers now.
When you were filming, Mark, did you ever reach a moment where you genuinely felt afraid, not so much of physical danger, but of realizing reality may be vastly stranger than I or humanity is prepared for?
I mean, not me personally. I was the one that was pushing on to try and find the source, try and get more interaction. But yeah, I mean, Guy, he was my co-presenter on the film, and then the crew, they were getting a little bit freaked out. Esther as well, who came along, she was getting a bit scared, a bit frightened, I guess, because of the unknown. And you can watch the film, but we were kind of running out of lights and power, and it was a long walk back to the car park, a couple of miles probably, and we had to go. But on the way back, and there's no cameras on, we heard a cryptid howl. It was like a wolf, okay. And then there are no wolves in the UK apart from zoos, and there's none nearby, and that was really, really freaky. And I couldn't explain that. It was like, where did that come from? And
Did you capture
the
it? Did
hmm?
you get
No, we
that
didn't.
on
No,
tape?
the cameras. No, the cameras were off, and we didn't have any. All our phones were dead, so there was nothing to capture it on. But that was weird, and a little bit unsettling. But then, I was told about this by Nick Redfern, a UFO researcher investigator. He said there could be a Rendlesham, what's called shrug monkey, which is a little bit like a Sasquatch or that kind of creature, but an English version, maybe interdimensional. So that was really interesting, and this is going to lead on hopefully to more investigations, because we don't have the answers. But you were spot on with Skinwalker Ranch. That was the nearest equivalence, because when we started out, we were thinking British Roswell, but then during the investigation, no, this is like Skinwalker Ranch. There's so many different types of phenomena going on here, not just UFOs, for instance. And then, when we get back, you made the film, and then you start finding out even more information. I talked to Major Laurie Rayfelt, and she was stationed at Rendlesham before the 1980 incident that Christmas. And so she wasn't there for the incident, but she was there leading up to it, and she felt a really a paranormal unease about the place, and she experienced ghostly activity, and also she communicated and saw a grey alien at Rendlesham. This was leading up to the 1980 incident. So I don't think it's just a one-off craft or whatever coming to, they had nuclear weapons on this base. It has to be pointed out, it was the Cold War. So people have always made that connection, and there were beams of light seen coming down onto the nuclear storage facilities. So there was an interest there. And we also have to take into account that two of the servicemen, John Burroughs and Jim Penniston, they've had to fight long and hard, but they've both got their medical payouts from the military because something affected their health there. That's documented.
Wow, this is incredible. So witnesses are describing glowing orbs, missing time, telepathic impressions, cryptid encounters, and they're all happening in this one region. Do you think that they are separate phenomena, or are they different masks that are worn by the same intelligence?
Yeah, I think we're dealing with the same phenomena. I mean, I guess one of my, not mission, but my kind of belief is that paranormal UFO activity, people try to separate them, but I think we're dealing with the same intelligence, and it takes on different guises, different forms. So that's what I think personally. I mean, and I've written a book about this called The Cosmic Joker. That the phenomena always seems to be kind of secretive, unreachable a little bit, and changing. It'll change to the circumstances. And two famous UFO encounters I give to for examples of this cosmic joker is the Pascagoula in Mississippi. I don't know if you're aware of that one. There was two fishermen, working class factory workers, went fishing after work one day and saw a UFO basically and a craft and were taken on board and were experimented on with these weird beings, but they had like crab-like pincers, and they explained them and they went to the police. They were very scared. The police had a secret recording because they police assumed they were lying and making it up, and the recording shows they weren't. They were terrified, and they were telling the truth. But I was interested in this, like, why would two fishermen experience these entities and they've got crab-like pincers? That seems to me a bit weird. Maybe it's connecting with them and thinking what's in their mind and taking the appearance of what they, what's in their conscious subconscious. And there's another case up in Scotland. Robert Taylor, he was a forestry worker, and basically he was, no nonsense guy, ex-military, served in the Second World War. I think he was on a boat, and then he was out in this forest one day and he saw these kind of craft coming to them, but they looked like mines that you would find in the sea and had these things coming off them, and one of them damaged his trousers. Again, he was like in an otherworldly experience, and why would he vision these, extraterrestrial or whatever they were, craft as mines? Because, he was at sea in the Second World War and clearing mines. So maybe that was what they were taking out of his subconscious. I don't know. But I think there is this element to this non-human intelligence that can take any form and does interact and takes your psychological makeup and maybe acts on it.
That makes a lot of sense to me because even on Earth, a lot of people have had an interaction with what they believe often is an owl. And then it turns out when their memories come back, whether they've done deep hypnosis or something to regain lost time, they come to find out it was actually an alien. And the two animals that are very big are owls and deer. So that makes sense to me, what you're saying, that maybe the way they look in their organic form is too much for us, or maybe it's just energy and etheric. and they're trying to replicate something we can relate to, not realizing how strange that might be for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point, I think. Yeah, definitely.
Incredible. So this place, this Rendlesham Forest, it's like it blurs the line between science fiction, folklore, psychic phenomena, ancient myth. Do you think, Mark, that these modern UFO encounters also echo ancient fairy lore, spirits, and supernatural legends?
Yeah, I mean, definitely we have to take into account where Rendlesham Forest is. It's an ancient part of Britain, Suffolk. We've got the fairy folk, like you said, and there's all these other myths. We've got the black dog, the black shook it's called, which is like this interdimensional black dog that appears. And there's even a nearby church that has claw marks from this massive dog on the door, which is said to be the devil himself, who came when they were preaching in the church, and this devil came as a dog and scratched this door. And so there are always local legends nearby. And also we got the lantern men, the will-o'-the-wisps. These are all in Suffolk folklore, this phenomena that is in this area. And Rendlesham Forest is right next to Sutton Hoo, which is an ancient Anglo-Saxon burial ground. So there's this energy here, and it's like crop circles and stone circles in Wiltshire. They're there for a reason. Maybe they're tapping into ancient energy, some lost technology that we don't have anymore. And I think the same a little bit with Rendlesham Forest. There's an energy there that sometimes comes out. Maybe it's a portal, like we said. I don't know. We need to keep investigating.
It's fascinating. I mean, for us here in the US, Skinwalker Ranch, I know about it. I've interviewed Thomas Winterton, who is one of the managers. I mean, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't be that fascinated and brave as what you're talking about to go into such a mysterious, unknown, and potentially malevolent. I think, I don't know your beliefs. My beliefs are that most of what is out there is benevolent, very advanced civilizations, very kind to us, very interested in us joining the galactic community. But these pockets that we're talking about, where there's something else going on and something else that seems to have a way interdimensionally of coming in and out at will, that's a bit terrifying to me. Do you know any stories? You said many people go out there. Many people like to go there during the weekends. Are there stories of people in this area where something really like significant occurred that is notable?
Yeah, I mean, what it's known for, and this is what John Hanson, the ex-police officer, told me. And he was the first person that told me he went there, and they saw orbs of light. I've got photos of these, even a UFO on one occasion. But also, what it's known for is these things called apports, which is basically these stones falling out of the sky, because they would be sitting there meditating, and there would be a thump, he was telling me, and then this stone would just appear from out the sky. And then they would go and obviously find the stone, and it'd be warm. Okay. And then, he's had these stones sent off to a laboratory and been tested, and it's like they're pristine, like they've just been formed. It's really, really strange. And where are they coming from? Are they coming from, like I say, this portal coming through, a bit like a poltergeist activity, possibly? And people are going there. The weekends and having a similar sort of experience. I have to say we didn't have any apports, but I've spoken to people even while we were there. There was people going to a different part of the woods to experience this, and then and also they would hear kind of ghostly sounds, kind of vocal voices calling out to them. In this forest, so that is really spooky. I don't, like you were saying, like yourself, I think most life has been benevolent. Most humans are good, you have to say, and I think it's similar in the universe, but there is light and dark. There is a darkness to some of it, and I'll just share with you one of the things that happened to me that kind of opened my mind to other things being out there was when I was a child. I was about 3 or 4, I felt kind of truly connected to the universe, and I would just stand there and, I felt part of something bigger than that possibly I'd been here before. And then one night when I was going to bed, this woman's face came out of my bedroom wall, and it was like it was really ethereal and something different. And at the time, I thought it was an angel, having that religious kind of background a little bit. I thought it was an angel, and it gave me a message that everything would be all right. And then the following day, I didn't have a great childhood, and that's when all the kind of the abuse started in my life. And I feel like that was a visitation to give me kind of some sort of hope, and to get me through some really tough times. But now I think maybe, was it an angel? Was it something else? Maybe I just perceived it as an angel because that's what you do as a kid. You've been to church and you read a bit of the Bible and you see angels. Whereas now I was thinking, well, maybe it was something else. I don't know, but it profoundly impacted my being, and my search and my quest, which I'm still on, which is why I'm talking to you now, because of that experience that I can't rationalize. And then for your viewers and listeners out there, I've got a science degree. I went to university. I'm very skeptical, but I know, having had my own experience, there's something more to life than material reality. And you said you've been going around talking to people, and people talking about UFOs at the moment. I go around to a lot of film networking, music things, and I always wear a little UFO badge. And people will come up to me knowing it's okay to talk. And once they know it's okay to talk, they'll tell their story. And so many people have had weird experiences they can't explain. But in the UK, it's very much more kind of can be ridiculed. And in the US, you're more open-minded. You've got members of Congress actively talking about angels and demons and UFOs, and whereas over here, that wouldn't happen.
I hope that
Ooh.
changes. I really hope that changes. And you, even though I know there's a lot of frustration with folks here about, oh, the government is compared to what is really happening, what they're putting out is so minuscule and often redacted. But I really believe still, President Obama, Trump, coming out saying what they did, even with the redacted documents, it is opening a conversation for the first time in mainstream, which is where I feel it's very important for the conversation to start happening. Because I think it used to be folks like you and me who know what we know, have had experiences like we've had, and then there are the others who go, you're crazy. I mean, that's nuts, right? But now the folks who have always been in the you're nuts camp are suddenly going, whoa, the government is bringing this up. The whistleblowers are saying this is true. Films are coming out, they're on the news. This is important, really important right now. And what do you hope to achieve then with your documentary and everything that it's showing?
I guess to create more awareness in the UK, because we don't have that disclosure movement here. We tried to start a group last year. We had a meeting and we've got loads of interest from UFO social media commentators that came, and it was a great success. And we wrote a letter to the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. It was hand delivered to him. Someone came who lived near him. We had tentative meeting with someone from the House of Lords, which never happened. So we haven't broke through yet. And that's why I made my previous film, which is The King of UFOs, which is my handle on social media, because the royal family over here are massively into UFOs and the paranormal, and no one knows that really. And I think if we show that the royal family is still pretty much respected despite the Epstein, Prince Andrew thing, they've still got a lot of clout, and they think, well, they believe in these things. So maybe we should take a closer look. And we found loads of evidence that especially Prince Philip, he was well into UFOs. The Queen even sent one of her scientific advisors in the middle of the night to the latest crop circle being formed in Wiltshire. And I've managed to find a letter from Prince Philip to King Charles, Prince Charles at the time, saying crop circles, I'm pretty sure, are formed by some invisible phenomena, much like the Uri Geller thing that we were talking about. So they've got that interest there. And it's like, I want to get through to King Charles because I know he's got an open mind. He's very spiritual. He could be the one to kickstart this in the UK. So that's my mission at the moment, I think.
Heard that quite a bit, that the Roy, I mean, there's the one line, party line, which I've heard in my circles, yes, the royal family is very into it. But then there's the conspiracy piece, which is like, oh, the queen and all her children are reptilians running the country. And I mean, I don't know about this. I guess where there's smoke, there is something of import. And it sounds like they're open to it. They're into it. They probably passed it down. And so I really hope that maybe moments like this, where you're being so visible, or times you're on TV or otherwise being interviewed, it catches somebody's attention and that somebody will turn them on to what you are doing right now. Because it's
Yeah,
wonderful.
I mean,
It's like a great time.
thank you. It is progressing because of what's happening in America at the moment. I've done two TV interviews in the UK this weekend, which is pretty much unheard of. But even the UK started to take it because Trump's released these files. There's some great videos in there. And so, getting onto mainstream media is a big step over here. So, I'm hoping that will continue. And the weird thing is, talking about interacting with this phenomena. Just this afternoon, me and my wife are sitting in the garden. It's a very hot day. We're in the shade, and she sees something in the sky. And it's like, wow, that looks really, really weird. And it was like an orb coming in and out, first of all, and then zoomed in, and it looks a bit like a triangle. And it was just phasing in and out. It wasn't a plane, it wasn't a satellite. It's like, okay, so why has this appeared? Is this a coincidence, or is this something to do with, increase? Is it trying to communicate with us? I think so. I have to say, I do think so.
When that something, especially because of the work you're doing and the visibility you're gaining right now, I wonder something like that where you're just sitting and relaxing and it reveals itself, and certainly you and your wife see it, that it's saying, you know, thank you. Thank you for being a spokesperson. Thanks for what you're doing. We're with you. We know.
Because I'm, yeah, it's a really good point because I'm a great believer in synchronicities and being kind of in touch, in harmony with the universe, and it will send you messages. And a lot of the success that I've achieved, in my creative life is through listening to these messages and acting on them. When you get an inspired thought, acting on it, and then I ended up getting a Guinness World Record, doing a lot of music things, good things for changing royalties and all this, all because I had a message from the universe to do something and I did. And so I'm a great believer in that. You can call it the law of attraction, whatever, but I believe you've got to listen out for these, watch for these synchronicities. And even this morning I had a really weird one. I was sat having breakfast and I was thinking about this obscure song I used to listen to when I was, I don't know, 18 or something. It's a really soft rock classical, Heat of the Moment by a band called Asia. A bit obscure. Never ever heard it on the radio. My wife puts the radio on after breakfast and this song comes on. It's like, wow. Usually it plays the Beatles and the Stones. It's a 60s station and it's playing this 80s soft rock classic. It's like, oh my gosh. That was really, really weird. I couldn't explain it.
Love that. I love that. All these affirmations. And I love that you use the law of attraction in everything you do, that
Definitely.
you're that tapped in. That's beautiful. Yeah. You mentioned your science background, and I think that's very interesting. And I also, by the way, really like that you're skeptical. I think it's healthy, you know, not just drinking the Kool-Aid, but needing discernment, needing things to be proven to really show up scientifically. That's also very good. And you're using scientific instruments during your investigation, and Still, some of the most profound experiences really seem deeply emotional and spiritual. Do you feel like science is approaching a frontier where consciousness itself becomes measurable?
Well, that's the key to it, because you can have the scientific instruments to measure electromagnetic radiation, for instance, but it's getting the phenomena interacts with you using consciousness. How do we measure that? That's the key to it, and I think that's why we haven't got that proof yet, because it's not just about physical stuff that's happening. It's a about an interaction with your mind. And the mind is the final frontier, not space. It's consciousness. And science is gradually getting there. And it's, some scientists are now saying that, okay, yeah, consciousness is now, it's definitely separate from the brain. Okay. So it's separate from the brain. So where is it? So they're gonna have to say, well, it's out there somewhere. It can be out there. It's in the cloud. And we can all tap into it. It's a complete I mean, that's why I think. I think I call it the mental internet. It is out there, and it's tapping into it, which can give you using the law of attraction, for instance. And this ties in with people who have had out-of-body experiences, which I've had, near-death experiences, which luckily I haven't had, but I know people who have had, and they all describe the same thing. And I'm pretty sure when we die, our physical bodies die, something happens to this energy, this consciousness. I don't know where it goes. But something happens to it. It doesn't just disappear. Energy can't just be destroyed. It goes somewhere.
Beautiful place. We're going to take a quick break here. And where we go after we pass, and consciousness, and the fact that these things are now interacting with us in a way that goes way beyond science, but is literally interacting with our emotions, with our mind. This is an exciting time. And we're going to pause here for a moment because if something inside of you is activating right now, this is your next step. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed and get your free starseed report. It's not just information, it's actually a galactic mirror of who you truly are, where you've been, other lifetimes in the galaxy, who your dominant species is universally, not on Earth, in this lifetime. And it breaks down all these components and qualities that let you know that you're still connected to your galactic ancestry and family. It's at my website, Debbie, Debbie, and the last name is Dashinger, spelled Dachinger, debbiedashinger.com/starseed. And if you're interested in more of what Mark is talking about, his handle on social media is at King of UFOs, and also his film you can get on his website, we'll be giving out later. Plus, it's on Tubi. And if you're feeling this conversation that we're having, don't just watch it, interact with it. Comment, subscribe, like, hype this video so Mark and I can reach the people, the souls who are really ready and hungry for this message. Coming back for part two of this amazing conversation, I want to ask you about telepathy, because that's one of the phenomenons that has happened a lot in this area. So in this area, but also in your life, Mark, have you experienced anything telepathic with paranormal, other dimensional beings?
Yeah, I think so. I think with the Rendlesham visit, where we were investigating making the film, one of the stories about the original 1980 incident was serviceman Jim Penniston. He claims to have seen this triangle-shaped craft come down in the forest, and it had strange hieroglyphics on it. But he actually went up, touched this craft, and he claimed to have a psychic binary code download. Okay, and we didn't talk about. I mean, I was a little bit skeptical about that because he didn't come out with that till a few years later, but had it decoded and had some message about this place called High Brazil and how this craft came from the future, for instance. And it's all a bit weird. And so we didn't look into that when we were doing our investigation. However, when I got back late at night, really, really tired, about 3 a.m., I lay down on my bed and all I could see was ones and zeros. It was like I was having some sort of message. And that was really, really strange. I couldn't, I could try and debunk it. I'm tired. I did know about the original story, but we didn't talk about it on the day. It wasn't in my mind at all. So what was that? I don't know. And the other kind of time I've had is with my wife, actually, who is quite in tune, I would say, and I'm getting messages and things. And there was some incident where her gran, who she was caring for at the time down in London, had lost something, and she was asking me, because I was a bit in tune as well, for some help to try and locate this. I think it was a rosary or a cross that was very important to her. She was up Irish Catholic kind of, and she'd lost it. And I just got a message saying handbag, 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 which I sent to my wife, and then she found it. It was in there all along. But you could say that was just coincidence, but I did have that message which I sent to her, which is really, 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 really strange. So, and I guess the other thing, not telepathy, but possibly a message, was that I was, because I'm a musician, I'm in a band called the Pocket Gods. We went to a Christmas party. It was with the people that do the Brit Awards, quite a big thing over here. They were doing a Christmas party, and I went in this place in London, and I saw they were doing a raffle, and they had these really, really expensive, fancy headphones, handmade. And I just knew then I had to like woof, download that I'm going to win those. Bearing in mind there's a couple of thousand people there with tickets. But I said to the organizer, "Listen, I've just been speaking to Uri Geller today," which is true. I was and chatting to him about psychic stuff. And I said, "I know I'm going to win this." And I told him, and they pulled the number out, and I won. I won these headphones.
Oh,
But that was like some sort of message, because I was in tune with whatever this phenomena is, because I've been actively talking that day to Uri Geller about this and how to connect with it and how to use it. So yeah, that's interesting. But I don't think I've had any messages from what you would say extraterrestrials. But
orphan.
I don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah, I like the way you called it earlier, the cloud. So it's
Yeah,
like, you're
the cloud. Yeah.
accessing the universe to make
Yeah.
this download directly.
And the other time when we did it, I did a film. It's on, I think it's on Amazon Prime. It's called UFO Encounters of the Fifth Kind. And this was exploring CE5, basically. And I was quite skeptical, but I spoke to a lovely American lady called Ray Dove, who teaches you how to do it, doesn't charge a penny, lovely lady. So we had these protocols to do where we got a group of my friends, the back of my house. I live in the middle of nowhere. We meditated, we played music, we got our vibrations up. And we did connect with something. Right at the end of the film, something appeared to us. And giving us a message of hope, and that was unusual. And I can't explain that either, and I try and debunk it, but I couldn't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done CE5s because there are beautiful pockets here in California where there's a lot of craft activity. And we have absolutely seen some outstanding craft come. And it's very clear it's for us. And lucky, like one story, luckily, there was four of us, because I think the more witnesses you have, the better. We all captured it on camera on our iPhones. And not one truck. Not one car on a busy freeway stopped, which is impossible because it was huge and it was hanging right there in the middle of the sky above the freeway. So I, and this is right after CE5. So I know this stuff works. And I love that you said the meditation and the music to bring the vibes up. I've
Definitely.
always understood the extraterrestrials look for a sincere heart, an open heart. in this work. That's what they resonate with. And I think that's also a very important component as well, is that the vibration, the frequency of you is up in order to receive them, to see them.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's what we found was key, which is why we think when we did the Rendlesham meditation, we were told, for instance, not to drink alcohol, etc. I'm anti-total, so I don't drink, but my co-presenter guy was drinking Guinness all day, so we were wondering whether that affected what we manifested that had a slightly scary effect, especially for him. In terms of this weird noise, these orbs, a feeling of unease, was that because he was drinking alcohol? So I said to him, we need to do it again, but just not do the. And we kind of, we had a bit of an argument on in the film about this, because I don't think it was helping. So yeah, no booze when you do it, no alcohol.
Makes sense, or anything else. There's a lot out there now that people can do, anything from weed on. And just, I think, yes, sobriety is important. Plus, you want to
Big
be
time.
able to speak to this intelligently, interact with it from a place of sovereignty as much as you can when something paranormal happens. I think that's very
Absolutely.
important. And vibration also, when you lower your vibration. Look, I drink wine now and then. I'm not a big anything drinker user, but it does alter you. It really does
That's it.
alter
Does
you.
definitely, yeah. And even stimulants, like, I drink too much coffee, that's my one vice, but I wouldn't do it when I was doing this.
That's
So,
wonderful.
yeah, you've got to have that, yeah, ability to raise your vibration, and I think it's key to everything in life as well. I mean, which is not always easy. Because you go through hard times, and then at your lowest, that's the time when you need to be up there, and that's the hardest to do it. But if you can do that, then you've mastered your life.
That's so true. It really is so true. And especially because we came here to be light workers. So, I mean, feelings are feelings. We were born human and we have emotions. So they're there to feel, but it's good to process them and get them out and cycle through as well as you can in whatever situation so you can be who you came here to be. And it's interesting. There's a lot of experiencers who say that when I had contact, this changed me permanently. Some people get heightened intuition, synchronicities, like you were talking about, majorly creative psychic awarenesses. Do you feel like your encounters have altered your perception, your dreams, or even your sense of identity?
Definitely, yeah. It's given me hope. I mean, because I've had some tough times in my life, especially in my childhood. But it's kind of focusing on what you have and being grateful, attitude of gratitude, which helps you get into that mindset, which can push you forward. I mean, I'm just trying to think. Sorry, my mind's gone blank now.
Question for you, if I may,
Sure.
because you
Yeah.
were very vulnerable with us earlier talking about your childhood, and you said right before the abuse started, this woman's face, the best that you perceived it, but definitely an energy came through the wall into your room and spoke to you as a child and said, everything's going to be okay. And I'm very curious. So the abuse starts, and you say it changed you. Is that because this voice or this energy you felt was with you? Was it because when things got tough, you held on to that? Like, how did that influence you?
Yeah, I think it's because I know there's something else out there that's higher than us, and that this, whatever happens on this plane, is not the be all and end all. There's something else after. So you could have a miserable time, but there's going to be something else after. I think that's what kind of got me through. And the fact that, I had that profound message. And basically, it wasn't until, I met my wife and started facing these things, talking about it, therapy, whatever, that my life started to improve when I was moving away from it, acknowledging what had happened. I used to drink too much, for instance. Don't do that anymore. But because of that message and that the felt that I felt connected somehow, part of the divine, I would say, that I could get through it. And I did still have difficult moments, but yeah, it's positive now. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, you bet. And you felt, if I'm correct, when you're in this forest, you're surrounded by silence, strange lights, uncertainty. Was there ever a moment where you thought, this phenomenon is somehow aware of me observing it? Was there a definitive feeling or moment when that switch happened?
Yeah, there was quite a lot, to be honest, because if you see the film, you'll see how it works. We started, me and Guy, trying to meditate. He was drinking. I wasn't in a great mood, and the two of us weren't having enough energy, so we didn't know what to do. We were trying to find someone else to join us to have another energy, but because there's middle of nowhere, there's no one there. There's no one in the forest. So we asked Esther. Esther's our assistant director on that film, so she joined us basically, and that really helped. And then that's when things started happening, but it was a bit of an interaction because we would say, "Oh, it's coming from over there," and as soon as we said that, it would change direction. It was over there, and then we had dowsing rods, divine. I don't know if you know those, and Esther had never used. Didn't even know what they were, so I showed her, just hold them like that, and they're just spinning around like crazy. And she's going, what's going on? And the more she did that, the more they span around. And this is all on camera as well. It's like she didn't know they were supposed to do that. So it was so there was that. But I think there was a little bit of I was there because I wanted to find it. I was pushing people on, let's go into the woods. I think it's there. I saw an orb of light. And I was excited. That's what I had. And I thought, yeah, I can find it. This is going to be proof and this is going to be brilliant. I had to cajole everyone else to come along. And they were getting a little bit wary, I guess. So I think it was feeding on a little bit of their fears, maybe.
It's fascinating that you brought the dowsing rods into it, and I've never seen them make a full circle. I mean, they basically sit there benign until you ask it a question. So, did you or did Esther ask any yes/no questions? And if so, what did you receive?
She was going, what is this? What is happening? And that was really, so it wasn't, she was saying, what is this? So, I mean, we were asking questions as like, what do you want us to do? Where should we go? And then that's when it did bounce around the forest. So it was like, but we weren't getting clear answers. So I mean, just for me to be clear, it was quite muddled. But then maybe I put that down to people's vibrations, the alcohol. That was a little bit messy, but still an amazing experience and something that we want to try again. Maybe this summer would be good. So yeah, it's definitely there. But then it got me thinking, okay, we're at Rendlesham. Okay, we think there's a portal there. It's tales of, cryptids, otherworldly beings, aliens, etc. But could you theoretically do this anywhere? If your mind can connect to whatever's out there, say to the ETs, through, raising your vibration, your consciousness, could you theoretically do it anywhere? Because when we had the premiere of this film at Raindance Film Festival last year, it was not far away from Buckingham Palace. So I had the idea. We didn't do it, unfortunately. We should go down to Buckingham Palace and do a mass C5 and see if we can get a UFO come out. above Buckingham Palace. That would be amazing. So,
Oh, it would
but
be
you see what I'm saying? Can
amazing.
you do it anyway? If you got this belief, knowledge that you can tap into the cloud, this mental internet, make contact, theoretically, you should be able to do it anyway, don't you think?
Really do, because there's evidence of people having extraterrestrials at their homes everywhere. And even though there are definitely pockets where there's more activity than others, I just don't think that they are that discerning. I think when they want to be somewhere, they want to be somewhere. I've had some even just driving from Los Angeles to San Diego, seen spacecraft coming back from San Diego, not the same trip, but another time. Why the freeways? I mean, the freeways alone, that's very strange, but they're not just me. I know lots of people who have had this happen, homes, farms. So, yes, I really believe that you can. I know people do CE5s in their backyard. And so I think it's beautiful that they're engaging, that they're letting them know we're open, we're interested. Please
Definitely.
come connect. We're here. We're waiting.
Yeah. We should try it tonight.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you're into the law of attraction, that you use the law of attraction. You've got also this concurrent music business, musicianship, and you wrote this book called Perfect Harmony, which connects manifestation, neuroscience, psychology, and quantum physics. What do you feel like is the biggest misconception that people have about the law of attraction, about how it works and how to use it?
I think because it's not a physical thing like gravity, you can't easily measure it, I guess. So people think it doesn't exist. It's hard to quantify it. I think that's it's a little bit out there in the ether. It's a bit airy fairy. I think that's why. But you have to look at it and try it, give it time, and just change your mental outlook and outset, and it does work. And I think the more you use it, the more in tune you become with the universe, and it will send you messages, moments to act. I mean, my big moment that I had, I've been watching the film The Secret a long time and had this in the back of my mind. There's one quote that stopped that jumped out at me from Jack Canfield. He wrote the Chicken Soup of the Soul books. And it says, if you have inspired thoughts, you have to act on it. It's like the universe giving you a message. And I was out in London one day in Soho. I was going to a music networking night. I picked up the paper, newspaper, and I read this article on the history of recorded music. And it was by a New York music professor called Mike Errico. And he was basically saying, people write 2.5 minute, 3 minute pop songs because that's what they did when we have 7-inch vinyl. That's what you could fit on. Okay. And he was saying, in the streaming age, where you get paid a small royalty after 30 seconds, why don't artists just write 30-second songs, maximize the royalty? And he was just writing as a throwaway comment. And I thought, my God, that's amazing. I need to do that. And I knew I had to act on that straight away. So I went home and recorded an album of 100 songs, each one th just 30 seconds long. So it's called 100 by 30, just to make that point. And it got me into Billboard magazine, world news everywhere, Guinness World Record, meetings with Spotify to try and change the way they pay people. And I made a film about it, which is coming out in June. So yeah, that's all because of having that thought, okay, that's a really good idea. I'm going to go away and do it. But who would normally just say, that's ridiculous. Why would you do 100 songs all 30 seconds long? That's crazy. They would. Most people, but musicians would. That's just crazy. Why would you do that? But I didn't. I decided to do it. And it led to all sorts of great opportunities.
Was lucky enough to see your documentary about this. And I have to say, the segment towards the beginning where you and your band get on stage, first of all, you have a moment of silence before you all start,
Yeah.
which was, and then you break out into the song, and then it's over. And I was sitting there going, and that's 30 seconds, and that's the song. And I
Yeah.
thought, wow, it's really genius. Like, okay, if the system is set up like this, then I'm going to work with the system till the system pays attention to what's wrong. And what a great download you got. And by the
Yeah, I mean,
way, I'm a
right.
singer, I have to say. I'm a musician, I'm a singer.
Right.
To write 130-second songs, that is not easy. That's a lot of work, a lot of creativity to flow through you.
It was, but then we scaled it up. We did a 300 song album, then we did 500, and then we finally did 1,000. Can you imagine that, writing 1,000 songs?
It's a lot of
Yeah, that was.
inspiration.
That was, but yeah, because it, I guess I was passionate about it and I was trying to get the message across, really. The whole 30 second thing about, maximizing the royalty, that wasn't the main reason for doing it. It was, obviously to create a buzz, to get the interest so that, the magazines, the media would talk to us about this serious issue. So, yeah, thank you for watching it.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. And let's just say, Mark, that if somebody is listening to us right now and they feel creatively blocked, whatever, what is the first way that they could step into reconnect with inspiration in their higher path? What would you recommend?
I would recommend possibly taking a walk in nature if you can. Try to empty your mind of all the worries and stresses and to see what comes up. And I think you've got to find what you're passionate about, whether it's writing jazz songs or writing a book. What would your dream be? What is your passion? What would give you that hell yeah feeling? Because that's something Jack Canfield talks about. If something comes your way and you think, oh, I could do that, I could do that, it might be all right, but don't do it. You need to have that yes, that hell yeah feeling, that passion to, that's when you're on the right course. That's when the universe is telling you that is your path. And that's what you need to listen out for. So I would take a walk in nature, reconnect, and listen for the messages from the universe where it's trying to, give you downloads or inspiration to go in a certain direction. That's what you need to
Hell yeah. So how can people find you and what's next for you?
Sure. Okay. So on social media, X, Instagram, TikTok, I'm at the King of UFOs, quite easily to find. A lot of my films are on Amazon Prime. It's Mark Christopher Lee. What's next? Well, yeah, releasing this film inspired the 30 from the 30 second song to the Million Pound Album, which is premiering at Raindance Film Festival in London on July the 20th in London's West End. Tickets are on sale, so come along, meet me, ask me questions about the law of attraction or UFOs. I'm doing a Q&A, so it should be fun. And yeah. Just if anyone's got any weird stories they want to share, contact me on social media. Any UFO stories, people contact me all the time and I always get back to them. So, it's my passion. So yeah, please get in touch. Thank you.
Oh, beautiful. And Mark, this is Dare to Dream. What are you next? Dare to Dream. What are your future dreams or visions?
Future dreams or visions. I think just for humanity to raise its consciousness to the next level, I believe we're on the verge of a paradigm shift in our future evolution, that possibly with UFO disclosure is pushing us towards that. And we need to be ready. So we need more people to help others to deal with what could be a massive culture shock and find out, oh yeah, there is something else living alongside us. We're not the highest element of the food chain, the species in the universe. There's something else interacting with us. It's real. It's not just made up stuff. And that's the thing with the latest UFO disclosure files that have been released. UFO experts or whatever researchers are looking very, very credible, and it's the debunkers that are looking a bit desperate nowadays. And so it's shifting a bit, becoming more mainstream. But we're going to need people, spiritual leaders, practical leaders, political leaders to help us adjust to the new world we're going to live in, which is going to be a lot better.
The new normal. Thank you for the work you do, and thank you for this really interesting conversation.
Thanks, Debbie. It's been really good fun. Thank you so much.
And folks who want to reach out, again, Mark Christopher Lee, and his website is nubmusic, nubmusic.co.uk. And I end today's show with this reminder. Perhaps UFOs confront us with the one frontier we have avoided exploring ourselves. And maybe the lights in the forest, the synchronicities, the impossible encounters, and the whispers at the edge of the lights in the forest are all really invitations for us for further consciousness. This is a request to believe in something beyond this world and to remember that we are far more mysterious, multidimensional, and powerful than we were ever taught to be. Next week on the podcast, I'm featuring Karen Bell, who is an internationally recognized clairvoyant and channeler who helps people reconnect with their inner guidance and true self, the soul. And through her connection with Sarai, the non-physical being that she channels, she reaches a global audience and inspires us to inner healing and self-realization. Thank you so much for joining us today on Dare to Dream.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.